This is WJBC This Week.
Our downtown plan, though, has more movable parts than the uptown plan did 15 years ago, because we were talking about a fairly small area in uptown.
And one of the big things they do is they are allowed to do this. They look at where the Democrats are, and they will look at where the Republicans are. And then they use that to create a bunch of districts that whatever party controls it at the time, that their party could win consistently over the next 10 years. And they'll win more elections than they would otherwise if it was drawn in a fair and transparent way.
We'll do 3 nights in London, where we'll do the typical tourist thing. We'll do the Tower of London. We'll walk by Big Ben and all of that fun stuff.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we take a look back at the top news stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Terry James. On this week's program, the current proposal for a downtown Bloomington hotel is now off the table. Ads will begin to run for the Independent Map Coalition. And Boy Scouts crossing the big pond to check out London and Scotland. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. I'm Terry James. This week, WJBC's Patty Penn spoke with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner about the proposed downtown hotel, the current project not going to happen.
And this morning we're hearing that there will not be a downtown hotel per the plan that you looked at. And I'm sure that that is a disappointment to you. But I believe from what I'm hearing, you also just want to make sure we made the right decision.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've made downtown, you know, one of our top priorities for economic development. It's revitalizing our inner core, our historic core. It's certainly going to be a very important strategy in order to really grow our local economy in the 21st century. And so we've made a lot of progress. We've got Route 66 Visitor Center. We're improving signage. We're working on the area south of the library. So there are many, many places that we're making progress on. We were hoping for a major game changer to help link the Coliseum to the core of downtown. To get new events, do all kinds of things. Yeah, a big source of tipping point, I guess, you know, in terms of the process of revitalizing downtown. But it has to be the right type of deal, and we have to be sure we protect taxpayers. I've said all along the project would have to pay for itself, and all the very conservative projected revenues said that was going to be feasible. SB Freeman and Associates confirmed that. But what we absolutely had to have was a commitment to the private funding. So if we couldn't get a solid, rock-solid commitment letter, we can't go forward. And so we have to, you know, we've gotten some really bad agreements in the past. The city of Bloomington did. But it's not going to happen under my watch. We're going to protect taxpayers. We're going to make sure that we have the right type of agreement and we're not getting into contracts that blow up in our face.
So on this particular issue, if I'm understanding, it was Riverside Lodging Bloomington LLC that brought the proposal, and then it was the Friedman Development Advisors that said that this is probably not a risk that you want to take. And so from this standpoint, can you tell us what it was about the proposal that they didn't like in particular?
Well, there are always minor things with proposals, and, you know, Chris Coos and company can tell you about all those, and, you know, in Uptown Normal, but you can usually work those out. The one thing that we absolutely had to have, as I mentioned, is a rock-solid commitment letter for the $38, $39 million of private money that's going to go into this. And so, you know, our skin in the game might have been around $10 million. We never managed to work that out, where we would have use the revenues, new revenues from this project, to pay for the parking garage or whatever. We never quite were able to handle those final details because they needed to demonstrate that they had a commitment of a financial institution to write the $38 million check. And that's what we didn't have. It wasn't rock solid. And the full report will come out, but that's the main sticking point. And it's obviously a deal breaker.
Yeah, huge deal breaker. That's not money you can just come up with probably without that extra help. So what?
Right. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they couldn't have. It's just before we agree on precise terms, you got to have your financial house in order, right? Otherwise, you know, it's not happening. Again, as I say, at least a really risky agreement like that's not happening under my watch.
So what happens now? I'm assuming you'll entertain if someone else has a better option.
Yes, and there are many things that we can do, and there are, as I say, there are many things we're working on in downtown. But looking for a major game changer, as you saw in Uptown Normal with the Marriott and extra parking and conference center, was a huge boost forward. That was kind of their tipping point. And that's pretty common in downtown revitalization processes. When I go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, all mayors are somewhere in the process of revitalizing their downtown. Some are at an even earlier stage than we are and have more challenges. Some are, you know, at the stage of normal and kind of tweaking the success they've already had. So that is the means by which, you know, most cities are growing in the United States now. The age of sprawl is not as present, to say the least, you know, as it had been in the past, especially among northern cities. So we're going to continue to make progress in downtown and in other places. Obviously, we've got Hy-Vee last year. We got Dick's Sporting Goods coming in. We got Green Top Grocery. We got the new $25.7 million Kroger on the northeast part. So we're advancing the economy in many ways. And we'll go back to the drawing board on this and look at plans B, C, D, and E.
And so as we are going to leave you today, there's good things going on in the downtown area right now. We've got...
Oh, there are lots of great things, yeah. And once we... It took a year, but we managed to close the funding gap with a grant to the Route 66 Visitor Center. And that's now been open a little over a year. And people are coming to downtown Bloomington, not just from throughout the United States, but throughout the world. And you know, they have a sign-in sheet. It's just amazing where we have people from Australia, from China, whatever. We've not been taking advantage of the Route 66 traffic. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And Pontiac has done a great job. Atlanta, Illinois has done a great job. And now Bloomington and Normal, we're getting our act together and making sure that we're a destination. So that's a great hit for the local economy, or not a hit, but a great, you know, advantage to the local economy. But it's also strategic because it's in our downtown. And location, investment location is absolutely critical in leveraging your assets.
So what is your best hope then as far as which way we head now?
At this point, we would sort of circle back with the council. We have a downtown plan that was passed in late 2013. I think I was mayor about 6 months. This is consistent with the downtown plan, many of the things that are there. Our downtown plan, though, has more movable parts than the uptown plan did 15 years ago. Because we were talking about a fairly small area in Uptown. We have, as I say, many movable parts. So we were looking for a critical anchor that the downtown plan calls for, and it could be one of several things. Having a 350 parking garage across from the Coliseum and then diagonally from there, a hotel conference center, Hilton Garden Inn, would have linked the Coliseum to the downtown, would have helped us get more events and gigs in the Coliseum. And there were people who are already thinking of investing, very serious investors, in all the properties surrounding that. Because if you got a $50 million project, all the properties surrounding it will instantly become worth more. So that's what I mean by we were really hoping that it would be a tipping point. We're going to keep searching for that tipping point, but we're going to be fiscally responsible, and we're going to protect the taxpayers.
Well, we do appreciate that because we don't want to get in a situation we can't afford to be in. So we are sorry that it didn't work out, but we know that we will keep moving forward and hopefully there will be a better option that comes up soon.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. We just keep going and make progress, and there you will always learn. I think we've all learned something. I think, and also going through the vetting process, a rather detailed vetting process, I think myself, the council, and even some of our staff, have to learn quite a bit. So, again, these things happen. You know, Normal, in their first attempt, it was not successful either. So we'll keep going. And thank you.
Thanks to Patty and Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Up next, I had a chance to talk with Dave Mellett with the Independent Maps Coalition, taking politics out of drawing the lines for districts in Illinois. They're starting to take out campaign ads now on radio and television.
Well, one of the big problems is
the people that we do elect, we usually like them, but when they go to Springfield, they get controlled by their party leaders. And one of the ways their party leaders control them is every 10 years when we have to redraw all of our state legislative maps, they are in control of that process. And they can use that to create districts that are safe for incumbents. They can use that to punish the people we elect. They can use that to get them to vote the way they want them to vote instead of them being directly accountable to us, the voters.
I remember when I lived in Congressional District 17, it reached all the way from the Quad Cities down to one street in Springfield. I'm not kidding. And this was from 2000 to 2010. And I thought, how is that even possible?
The way that the reason they do things like that is they sometimes will do that to put a person in a district so that person could run in that district. Or sometimes they'll do that to cut people out of a district to keep them from running. And one of the big things they do is they are allowed to do this. They look at where the Democrats are and they will look at where the Republicans are. And then they use that to create a bunch of districts that whatever party controls it at the time, that their party could win consistently over the next 10 years. And they'll win more elections than they would otherwise if it was drawn in a fair and transparent way.
So they kind of identify, okay, let's say I'm Republican and I want to look and see, okay, who voted Republican last election? I could draw lines around those areas so that I get more Republican voters.
Exactly. So in a state where we have anywhere from 55%, usually around there, people voting Democrat, you could win 70% of the state districts in the legislature by drawing districts a certain way, by packing a bunch of Republicans into just a few districts and spreading out your Democrats as much as possible. And in the past, the Republicans have done the same thing. They'll spread out their Republicans into a bunch of districts that they know they have enough Republicans in to win consistently, and then they'll just pack all the Democrats into a couple seats and say, oh, there you go.
Yeah, you know, Bloomington Normal drives me nuts because we, some people criticize us. They say, you never have any Democratic legislators on the air. And I say, we don't have any. we have a Republican, Jason Berrickman, Bill Brady, all Republican for the representatives. You know, we've got Bill Brady, Republican. It's an all Republican area, and it seems as if to be designed that way.
Yeah, there certainly are some districts that are drawn to just create lots and lots of Republicans in single areas, and it hurts voters in two ways. It makes people less likely to run in the primary. We've seen a very low number of people challenging people in primary elections. It also makes them less likely to run in general elections. So 60% of our November 2016 elections for the state legislature, that's House and Senate, are uncontested. And that's outrageous. I think you know that voters are pretty outraged with what's going on in Illinois. We've seen polling that says only 14% of voters think Illinois is on the right track. And yet only 40% of these races are contested. And that's because people know that these districts are drawn so that the incumbents can win very consistently.
Well, as we go back a little and look at this, you started a petition campaign and you received 563,000 signatures. But there's a cog in the wheel, so to speak, named Michael Madigan, who is saying that what you're trying to do is not constitutional. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, there's an organization that calls themselves the People's Map. They are filing a lawsuit, and they filed a lawsuit in 2014 also to kick the previous movement to get redistricting reform. They kicked them off the ballot. Again, in 2016, they're back, and they're saying that our state's constitution doesn't allow the voters to reform their constitution in this way. What we do know is that when this constitution was drawn in 1970, they specifically talked about redistricting and said this was one of the reasons that they wanted to allow voters to have their own petition process to change the Constitution. There are a handful of attorneys in Illinois who have taken advantage of some of the ways that the law in the Constitution was drawn so that they could try to prevent the voters from ever being able to change the structure of power in the legislature, because there is a group of people who benefit from the way the Constitution's drawn. And they take advantage of that to consolidate power.
So where are we at here? We've got to wait for the outcome of this lawsuit, and will that be done before the November election?
Almost certainly. So we went to district court a few weeks ago. We're waiting on a judge's decision that we should receive by no later than next week. But it's widely assumed that this is going to be resolved by the state Supreme Court before everything is all finalized. There's a deadline to certify the November ballot, and that's towards the end of August. So we're pretty confident that this should be all decided by that point.
Yeah, it would be nice to at least hear from the people of Illinois and say, okay, how do you want the process done? Because we are the ones, it's our tax dollars that are going into Springfield, and it seems like we should have something to say about this.
Well, they say that power comes from the people. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court said when they affirmed the state of Arizona's right to take this power out of the hands of the politicians and allow the voters to draw the maps themselves. So if power does come from the people, then I don't see the harm in letting 60% of Illinois voters approve of a change to their own constitution.
Yeah, so now what would this do if you are successful? How would the maps be drawn, and how could we keep any sort of influence, should we say, from lobbying groups or other political groups out of the map drawing system?
We are basing what we're drafting to the Constitution pretty heavily on a very successful bill that they created in California. So in California, the voters approve their own independent redistricting commission. So here in Illinois, we would have the Auditor General's office would appoint a panel. They randomly select from a pool of qualified people. This panel would then recruit people from across Illinois. And when they got to this stage in California, they got 30 to 40,000 applications from California citizens across the entire state to be on the panel. And it's sort of like applying to college. You have to fill out an application, you have to write essays, you have to show that you don't have a conflict of interest. And all this is done very publicly. All the information is released publicly, and they find the 100 best people from Illinois that apply to be on this commission. You can't be a lobbyist, you can't be a legislator, you can't be married to a lobbyist or a legislator. So there's some conflict provisions in there. And you take these 100 people, and then you randomly select 7 people based on balance with party, so Democrats and Republicans and independents. It needs to be even. And then we do allow each legislative leader to pick one of the final 4 members from that pool. So it is less complicated than it sounds, but you need to have multiple stages here so that there's no point where one politician or any bureaucrat can step in and put their thumb on the scale. And it's very public. They have lots of public meetings. Everything is very transparent. And we've seen this work. We've seen it work in Arizona. We've seen it work in California. Iowa has a independent system as well. There are a lot of states that have had a lot of success with this.
Will this only affect the races statewide, or will it affect the congressional elections?
So our Constitution only allows us to change the state legislature and their procedures. So we can't propose a change to the congressional mapping system right now. We're hoping that if the voters do approve this overwhelmingly in the fall, then maybe that will lead to a groundswell, and the legislature will also put this on the ballot themselves to change the congressional mapping system.
More to come. You're listening to WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. I'm Terry James. Several Boy Scouts from Central Illinois, including some from McLean County, headed to Scotland and London. And we talked with Eric Hoadley of Boy Scouts of Central Illinois.
You know, they're scouting in every country on the globe except for 6. I think mostly communist countries, you know, China, Cuba, North Korea, that kind of group. But everywhere else, they're scouting, and there will be scouts from 14 different countries coming together. And they all camp together. So while our scouts will be each hosted, I should say, Our 12 scouts will be divided into two patrols. Each patrol will be hosted by a Scottish patrol. And that group of 12 is in a larger sub-camp, which has Scottish scouts hosting scouts from. We've seen the list. It's Canada and Ireland and Sweden and Hong Kong and just scouts from all over the area. So it's going to be a true international experience, more than just the Americans and the Scots getting together.
How old are these boys from around Central Illinois?
And actually, we have a female because scouting is co-ed in every other country than the United States.
Okay.
But the age group is 14 to 17, and that's just the requirements to the Scottish group themselves.
Let's go over your travel schedule because you're on the road right now, I believe, headed to the airport in Chicago. Where do you fly to? What kind of time are we talking on the plane, and where do you lay over?
Sure thing. Yeah, you're right. We're on our way to Chicago. We'll catch a flight to Dublin, Ireland. It'll leave about 4 o'clock. It's a 7.5-hour flight. When we land in Dublin, it'll be 5:15 in the morning, and that'll still only be 11:15 body time. So our greatest challenge is getting these kids to sleep on the plane because we have about an hour and a half layover. Then we fly to London, where we land at 8 in the morning, but that'll be 2 o'clock body time. And now we need our scouts to stay up for about 12 hours. We'll do 3 nights in London, where we'll do the typical tourist things. We'll do the Tower of London. We'll walk by Big Ben and all of that fun stuff. Then we're going to take a train. It's on the same line that the Flying Scotsman, a famous steam engine in the U.K. We're going to go from London to Edinburgh. We'll stay overnight there at a property owned by the Scottish Scouts. And from there, we'll go about an hour and a half north of Edinburgh into the Highlands, where the camporee is taking place. And we're going to be there for 10 nights. And then at the end of this camporee, every single international scout is invited to the home of a Scottish scout for 5 nights.
That has got to be cultural phenomenon. I mean, from America all the way over to Scotland, they're going to be trying new food and new cultures, and that must be really exciting for the kids.
Oh, it really is. And my wife and I have been involved in youth exchanges between Peoria and its German sister city for over 10 years now. So we know really what these kids are getting into. And not only are they going to be seeing different cultures, you know, we'll be in England for a while, we'll be in Scotland for a while, they're going to be talking to scouts from other countries, but then they become part of a Scottish family. And that is going to give them experiences that they just can't read about in a book or watch a video about.
What is the difference between the culture of the Scots and Americans?
Difference in the culture between the Scots and Americans.
I mean, I know the food must be the main. I keep thinking of haggis for some reason. I don't know. I don't know why.
Sure. You know, and what's going to be surprising to these kids is not the differences, but the similarities. They're expecting everything to be different, and there's going to be plenty. The architecture, just the way their houses and the roads are built, driving on the opposite side of the road and things like that, and as well as foods. They have McDonald's everywhere, but it won't taste the same as it does here in the States.
No, definitely not. How are the kids doing? I mean, are they really pumped for this?
Oh, yeah. We're asking them, how well did you sleep last night? Oh, about 3 hours, that kind of a thing. we've got a good range here. We've got scouts who have traveled internationally before. The majority have not. They've flown before. We even have one scout that's never even been in an airplane before. So his first experience will be on an international flight.
Wow, that's going to be exciting. And I applaud you for being able to tell teenagers when to stay up and when to go to bed, because that's difficult to do.
I can tell them. They may not follow the advice.
Thanks to Eric Hoadley of Boy Scouts of Central Illinois. GMO labeling is a hot topic, and Congressman Rodney Davis spoke with WJBC's Scott Lachlan this week.
And let's go to Washington, D.C. now, where they control the weather, and see if we can't get Congressman Rodney Davis to stop it now. Morning, Congressman.
Boy, I wish you were right. It would not be nearly as hot and humid out here.
Do you ever hear anything like that from your constituents? UFO talk, controlling the weather?
No, just from you.
Oh, it's just me? All right. Well, we know you do. We know you do. All right. Before we get into, I can't wait to talk about genetically modified food labeling. But before we do that, let's talk baseball, shall we?
We won.
I know. You guys, the congressional game, which has been going on since the early 1900s, right?
Yep.
And do you know what the records of the two, the Republicans versus the Democrats? It's pretty close, isn't it?
Yeah, we're tied up. It's like 39-39.
Yeah, how about that? And you were catching?
I was. Caught the whole game.
You caught the whole game. Let me ask you something. Did you have trouble walking down the Capitol steps after the game?
No, I did not.
You're in shape, huh?
You know, a lot of practice, 6:30 a.m., rushing back to make sure I get showered up before I call you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
But it's every kid's dream to be able to play on a major league field, and I've got to do it now four times, and it's just, it gets more fun each day.
That's
each
awesome.
Time, and we raise more money for charity each time.
Laura, can we go out there during, you know what date it is? It's always in July. Let's go out there next July. We'll do our show from D.C., and then we'll go to the game. I would love to go to the, what?
Will we sleep in his office?
I don't know. Can we sleep in your office?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. And
I don't know if you'd like it once you got here, but sure, man.
And we talked. Congressman LaHood had great things to say about you, said you did a fine job. We asked Congressman Kinzinger, and he said he doesn't have time for that. He has to serve the people. He has to do the people's business. He must not be able to hit a baseball.
No, Adam played the first year that I played, and he hit a double. He's got a good bat.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was there taunting me at the game, too, so he wasn't too busy.
All right, and no one got hurt?
No one got hurt.
Right,
great game.
That's good.
You know, it just really was exciting down to the wire, one in the last inning, the last out, base hit, walk-off, and Bob Dold from Illinois is the one who scored the winning run.
Yeah, so you guys can do, you can, it's not contentious all the time. Things like
not
this.
At all.
Keep
in mind, this was right after the sit-in.
Yeah.
The night before was the sit-in.
Oh, wow.
Who would have thought that we could come together, shake hands, and walk off the field, you know, still friends after that?
I think you guys really ought to have a softball league where you play games regularly. That way you get to, and then go out for beers or what have you afterwards, and maybe you get to know the other side and get some things accomplished.
You know, that happens more than you think without the softball, but come on, Scott. There's never any conflict in beer-drinking softball leagues. You know that.
Detente through softball. I like it. All right. I hesitate to talk about the, because the, correct me if I'm wrong, Senate voted on genetically modified food labels yesterday?
They did.
All right. This will come to the House, correct?
It will, and
all right.
It will pass.
So let's talk about this, because the farmers are in tune to this. The farm bureaus are in tune to this. But I don't know if people like me, like Laura, are really in tune to this. Let me see if I have this right. There are foods out there that are genetically modified. Some people,
there are foods made with products from seeds that are genetically modified.
Right. Soybeans, for example.
Yep, corn.
And corn, yeah. And people want labels on there, on the food that has modified components to it, just saying, hey, this food is genetically modified. And there are others who have a problem with that. So, because
yes.
You've got a vast majority of Americans favor the mandatory labels. They just like to know. You've got dozens of countries, including all the European Union and Australia, they're already requiring similar labeling, but some people have a problem with it. So let's hear what the problem is.
Well, I don't know what the problem is with genetically modified foods, because frankly, not one scintilla of scientific evidence shows that they're harmful to anyone. And frankly, the biotechnology process that's used to genetically modify seeds allow us to grow more food to feed more people that are going to continue to come into this world, and we're not going to have any more land mass. We're not going to grow any more farms, so we have to figure out how to grow more food on the farms that we have, and that's what biotechnology, GMO seeds mean. And it's very frustrating for somebody like me who represents an ag district where we see less pesticide use because of these seeds. We see more yields and more opportunities to sell that food overseas and help our local economy. But there's a hysteria movement, Scott and Laura, that believes that GMOs are bad and unfortunately has gotten us to a process to have to stop a Vermont law from being implemented. Now, this Vermont law would have required labeling in Vermont, and it would have disrupted the supply chain for many food products nationwide. And what is laughable is that the Vermont law itself exempts Vermont products. I say if it's good enough for Prairie Farms to have to label their ice cream, then it darn well ought to be good enough for Ben and Jerry's to have to label their ice cream. And this fix that we're putting forth will require that to happen.
So you're saying people, this hysteria that people fear genetically modified foods, is it that they fear it or they just want full disclosure? Just let us know.
Well, I want full disclosure too. The problem we have with the bill itself has some other minute problems that I disagree with. But in the end, it will create a process that will allow for families, allow for moms and dads who are concerned, although science tells us they should not be, it would allow them to know what that label means. Because, frankly, you can walk into any store right now. I could see you at Hy-Vee again today, Scott.
Yeah.
And you and I could walk down those aisles, and I could point out labels that say non-GMO. And then you would say, what does that mean? And I would say, no one knows, because there is no process. And because of that, it's become a marketing tool rather than an educational tool that this bill will allow to actually take place and will allow families to know what that label means instead of now, no one does.
Our thanks to Rodney Davis and WJBC's Scott Laughlin. This week, WJBC's Dan Swaney talked with State Senator Jason Berrickman. He's been put on a special commission to talk about school funding.
I think the notion I put forward is that Illinois could embrace what's called an evidence-based funding formula. And this is an idea that other states are utilizing and are seeing some success with it. I think it's an idea from my conversations with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. I think there's a lot of support on both sides of the aisle for it. Interestingly, today at the press conference that we were at, the media asked Governor Rauner, they said, well, you know, if you're forming the commission, can you give us some insight as to what you'd like to see come out of it? And he said, well, you know, I'm going to leave it to the legislators to hash out the details. But then he added, he says, but I got to tell you, when I make decisions, I like my decisions to be evidence-based. I like to use data. I like benchmarks that are data-driven rather than, you know, supported by political rhetoric. Well, this is exactly what I've been saying all along, that if we're going to rewrite our state school funding formula, we ought to use data and evidence in doing so. And so I think there's a tremendous momentum that will help, you know, embrace this idea that I've put forward and hopefully make it a reality. I think it's very realistic that Illinois could embrace this.
State Senator Jason Berrickman with us. He's been named to a commission today called the Illinois School Funding Reform Commission, and their task is going to be finding a way to set up a school funding formula that is fresh, that is current. I didn't realize until I read the stories today, Jason, that nothing really has been done to change or modify the state school funding for almost 20 years now. So it's time that this gets done.
Well, it is time, and think of what's happened over 20 years or more. You know, the experience that a child has in a classroom is fundamentally different today than it was 20 years ago. You know, today we use computers. The kids are connected to the internet and to the world while they're sitting in a classroom. If a teacher says, you know, we're going to talk about X, Y, or Z, they can open Wikipedia instead of, you know, you and I went to those big old encyclopedias and looked things up and did book reports based on what we read in those, you know, expensive, out-of-date encyclopedias that we all had. Kids these days have so many tools and resources available, and it's time to update our funding formula, which is the state's, you know, think of it, one of the state's primary purposes is creating a solid educational system for our kids. And every, you know, what's at risk is that if we don't fix this, a generation of our students could get left behind. They may not have, you know, the opportunity in their school district to obtain the education that's going to equip them for the global economy that we all say we want them to go work in and compete in. So I think this is a very real thing that can have a tremendous impact on our kids and future generations, and it's time to fix it.
Our thanks to Dan Sweeney and State Senator Jason Berrickman. You're listening to WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now a look back at the week in news. Some officers of the law may feel like they are under a microscope following the recent shootings of suspects and murders of Dallas police officers. Illinois State University Police Chief Aaron Woodruff summarized an article he read in the Chicago Tribune.
He had mentioned that it was very similar to how soldiers must have felt coming back from Vietnam, how they feel like they're being looked at and criticized, painted with a broad brush.
Woodruff admits it's a difficult time, but says he has all the faith in the world that we will come through this and be a better country for it. After the police shootings in Dallas, Bloomington came together to stand against all violence. WJBC's Kerry Keene reports.
All denominations and walks of life came to First Community Church Monday to remember recent acts of violence throughout the country. Mike Matika from Not In Our Town says,
we can bring people together in a positive way. You know, that reinforces who we are, and that if we cultivate it and work together, we can build that community that's fairer and more just and equal for all people.
Reverend Kelly Becker states that in light of recent violence, it's imperative to work for a brighter future.
And to look forward to a different future for our neighborhoods, our community, and nation.
Kerry Keene, WJBC and WJBC.com.
A Bloomington state senator has joined the newly formed Illinois School Funding Reform Commission. State Senator Jason Berrickman says the commission is tasked with funding a bipartisan solution to reforming the Illinois school funding formula. Berrickman tells WJBC's Dan Sweeney the formula hasn't been changed in 20 years.
The experience that a child has in a classroom is fundamentally different today than it was 20 years ago. You know, today we use computers. The kids are connected to the internet and to the world while they're sitting in a classroom.
Berrickman adds he supports the idea of an evidence-based formula. The commission is required to provide a report to the General Assembly by February 1st. Congressman Rodney Davis says he's fine with labeling foods that are genetically modified as long as everyone knows what the label means. Davis tells WJBC Scott Lachlan some of the labeling stems out of misguided fears about GMO foods.
Not one scintilla of scientific evidence shows that they're harmful to anyone. And frankly, the biotechnology process that's used allow us to grow more food.
Davis says some companies are labeling their products as non-GMO to cater to customers' fears. As Unit 5 prepares for the new school year, the stopgap budget allows them to open their doors. But the future is still in question. Superintendent Mark Daniels says the positive impact of the temporary budget doesn't help the district as much as the public might think.
Recently passed state budget is certainly good news for school districts across the state, as it provides more certainty into the upcoming school year. Unfortunately, the economic impact for Unit 5 is not as large as many might expect.
Daniel says this is largely due to how the funding process works and says future reform is necessary for education. Three female snow leopard cubs were recently born at the Miller Park Zoo. Bloomington Parks and Recreation Director Jay Tetzloff says this is a jackpot for a species that has only 7,000 left in the wild. Tetzloff tells WJBC Susan Saunders, of the 69 zoos with snow leopards, only five had successful births this year.
two zoos had triplets, so this was the year of triplets. This is the first time more than one zoo's had triplets since I've taken over the program. And so we had three groups of triplets, and two zoos had singletons, just one.
A proposed downtown hotel and conference center in Bloomington will not move forward at this time. The news comes after a recommendation from the consultant.
Based on the information that Friedman Associates has presented to us, we had to have more assurances to move forward.
Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner says those are financial assurances, so taxpayers are protected. The project was up for discussion at the July 18th Committee of the Whole meeting, which is now canceled. The mayor of Normal testified to a congressional committee this week on the importance of investing in rail transportation. Mayor Chris Kuse says the success of Uptown Normal has been driven by investment in rail in the form of Uptown Station.
Thus far, public investment of approximately $85 million in federal, state, and local monies in the transportation arena has generated more than $150 million in private investment in the Uptown District.
Kuse told Congress an additional $45 million in private investment is already planned. He was introduced by Congressman Rodney Davis, who calls Kuse a national leader and advocate for transportation. If your business needs a boost, you might want to consult your nearest Pokemon. The new Pokemon Go game is sending fans of all ages around Bloomington Normal looking for the cartoon characters. Now the McLean County Chamber has released a guide for businesses to help them lure new customers. McLean County Chamber Marketing Director Jonathan Strupek says it's creating new opportunities for business owners.
The game has reached such a wide demographic that it's a great opportunity for businesses to reach out and just get such a wide variety of people in their door.
Strupek says you can pay for Pokemon to be located at your business. The guide recommends using signage to advertise that you are a Pokestop. The weekend news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It's time to take a look at the week to come. On Monday, we continue the Radio Bloomington Ag Tour, sponsored by the McLean County Farm Bureau, as we go up to Pontiac in Livingston County for the Livingston County Fair. Also, it's the 13th annual Radio Bloomington Blood Drive from noon to 5:30 at Avanti's in Bloomington. Donate blood, and you get a free gondola. Also on Monday, WJBC's Adam Stasinski will cover the Normal Town Council meeting. On Wednesday, the day's guests include Illinois State Senator Chapin Rose and McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers. And on Friday, Dan Sweeney talks with the folks at the McLean County Health Department. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. Thanks for listening. I'm Terry James.